Thank you. At this time, I'd like to inform all participants the call is now being recorded. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay, thank you. Glenn, could you do a roll call of those
over
here?
Yes, certainly. Philip Shepard.
Hello.
Mike Rodenbach.
Here.
Sorry, was that very friend, Mike?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Zaid Jamil.
Here.
Christina Rosette. Cyril Chua. Uta Deke is absent, and she has asked to be excused. Tony Holmes.
Yes, Glenn.
Tony Harris is absent, asked to be excused. Greg Ruth. Mary Wong.
Yes, I'm here.
William Drake.
Yes, I'm here.
Carlos Souza will join us later because he's in another meeting. Adrian Kinderis. Tim Ruiz is absent, asked to be excused. Stefan van Gelder.
Yes, hello Glenn, I'm here.
Thank you. Jordi Iparagvira.
Hello, here.
Chuck Gomes.
Here.
Edmund Chun.
Here.
Terry Davis.
Here.
Avery Doria.
Here.
Olga Cavelli.
I'm here.
Alan Greenberg.
Here.
And for staff, I believe we have Kurt Pritz, Dan Halloran, Denise Michelle, Rob Hogarth, Marika Koenigs, Liz Gaster, Patrick Jones, Craig Schwartz, Tim Cole, Maria Farrell, Ken Bohr, myself, Glenn, and Tricia Drakes has joined us for the call. Have I left off anybody?
Yeah, all off.
Olaf, sorry, Olaf.
No problem.
This is Greg.
I heard another voice. Oh, Greg, welcome.
Greg, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay, I'd like to welcome everybody to our last council meeting of the year. Moving to item number one, does anybody wish to update their statement of interest at this point or announce that they're about to update their statement of interest? Okay, thanks.
Aubrey,
I will.
I haven't had time to get to it in writing. I think everybody already knows this. But VeriSign will indeed be, it is planning on submitting applications for new GTLDs. So in case anybody didn't know that, I want to make that clear.
Okay, thank you. Before I ask anyone else if they'd like to do that, could whoever has noise in the background mute their phone? Anyone else wish to update a statement of interest at this point or announce a pending? Okay, I'd just like to remind everyone that whenever there's a change to your interest statement, please send it in writing to Glenn so it can be posted and make mention of it at the beginning of a meeting. Okay, moving on to item two, review amended agenda. Several changes from the first meeting that went out, and as always, the most current agenda is the one on the wiki. There are no council minutes to approve. They have been produced, but they're still in their pre-review process. A 7A has been added on GTLD implementation communications plan and other issues, and as you know, we have quite a few motions at the moment in that slot. We'll get to it later. And I have moved Tricia Drake's NOMCOM piece to right after the review agenda so that she doesn't need to sit through the first hour of this exciting meeting, but is free to go. So any issue or question on those changes? Any other changes that anyone would like to suggest? Okay, thank you.
Just a quick note, Christina sent an email. She's on a call, but will be joining us in 5 minutes or so.
I've actually made it in.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Already had quorum, but now we have all of the constituencies as well, and I'm glad. Okay, Tricia, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and thank you also for moving me to the front. Perhaps first of all, I should say that two of the staff members can now put on their nominating committee staff support hats. as opposed to any others they might have. One being Patrick, who's got the overall coordination role that John Rostin used to have, and delighted for those that don't know that Maria Farrell has now got the lead staff support role in relation to NomCom 2009. So both can step in and help me out if I need anything. but I'm not sure that Maria's appointment in respect of NomCom is yet commonly posted, if indeed it ever will be there. But so that's the first point. The second, the normal practice, as I understand it, is for the chair of NomCom to meet with the chair of GNSO and perhaps the vice chair to discuss requirements and desires in relation to NomCom and guidance, which we'll do our best to follow. In this case, in this year, Avery, you're one of the NomCom appointees whose term expires. Olga, I believe, is the other. And in fact, both of you are eligible to resubmit statements of interest, but we felt that actually the normal cup of tea with the council chair and vice chair should actually take place during council meeting, particularly, as I say, Avery, because of your position as retiring on chair. We also thought that there might be other things, because during Cairo, other aspects relating to NomCom were raised either in meetings or over coffee or such like. So again, the thought a 10-minute slot might be helpful. And the third point, which came up with one of our NomCom teleconferences earlier this afternoon, is that for Mexico, and this is a very quick one to finish, for Mexico, as I understand it, Glenn quite often organises sessions or requests, if you want, either myself or other NomCom members to sit in on the cross-constituency days for any slots. So that third is just one I said I would raise. But really, for the next 8 minutes now, it's really your input and your guidance in terms of the types of candidates and the profiles that that you would like, and really any other points you'd like to raise with me.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to take a cue. I want to make two comments at the beginning. One of the common practices has actually been with the last several NomComs, is that at the first meeting of the year, there was actually a meeting, whether it was over lunch or otherwise, between the NomCom chair, associate chair, etc., and whatever NomCom people had it to be about, and the entire council. So that has been part of the practice. And I also wanted to make it known and clear that I will not be submitting a statement of interest for the GNSO this year. I think 5 years is quite enough, and while through a technicality I could apply again, it just doesn't seem appropriate to me. So I will not be submitting a SOI for the GNSO. I'd like to open a queue.
Sure. Okay, just to respond on your first point, I would be delighted to continue the practice of meeting, whether it's lunch or coffee, but because of what you've just said, was the reason why we wanted to have this session as well. So again, that offer is open. As you know, I'm not shy.
Okay, great. Okay, I've got Chuck. Thank you. Anyone else like to be in the queue at this point?
Christina, please.
Philip.
Christina. Who else?
Philip.
Philip. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
Christina, is the nominating committee aware of the GNSO restructure recommendations that will impact the seating of the NomCom reps?
I assume that was addressed to Tricia.
What did I say? I meant
Christina.
To say,
Christina.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Trick.
The answer, Chuck, is unless there are things that are going to come up later in your meeting, I have, for obvious reasons, because as you know, I was on the original GNSO review working group, I have been following. So yes, I am aware insofar as where you're at in terms of the position there, yes.
Now, one of the issues that we'll have to work together on is that obviously one of the NOMCOM reps, we haven't identified which one would be a non-voting, and two would kind of have a special role. So we're going to have to coordinate that, obviously, between us.
Yeah. No, I recognize that.
Thank you.
And again, very happy to do so. The selection, well, I think there are two things that you need to be aware of, and they are on the in the announcement with the SOIs. The closing date is the 15th of April for SOIs. So, initial selection discussions will take place in Sydney. So, if there are both in terms of spec, but also candidates that one might want to encourage to submit their SOIs, we need to do that before the 15th of April.
And would there be? I know that you typically do an identification of what their interests are. Would that be encouraged down to the level of whether they want to be on the GNSO council on the contracted house or the user house or the non-voting position? Have you even thought that through?
At this stage, all that we're doing is asking for this year on the statement of interest, we're asking them just to indicate one option. And then obviously, if there's a candidate who applies to be at large but is a perfect board candidate or DNSO candidate, we would we wouldn't be put off by just being one. But to answer your question, at this stage we haven't drilled down on that. But certainly, one of the things I wanted to talk with you and perhaps at on cross constituency day is really thinking about exactly what you've just said, because I think the important thing is, one, to make it clear with potential candidates, but also to have in mind getting statements of interest from people who would be good candidates, mindful of what's going to be quite a challenging period for everyone, I think, in the implementation time.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Christina.
Yes, Patricia, I was curious as to whether the nominating committee plans to appoint new representatives to the reconstituted council that's going to be seated in June, given that the other, the stakeholder groups will have to do that. And if the answer is no, I was hoping you could provide some explanation as to the reasoning for that decision.
I think at this stage, all that I will say is that, because obviously it's a very interesting time to be the NOMCOM chair, we can only look at the seats with the position as it is now, and that's why I'm saying that in by Mexico, I think we're going to have to perhaps drill down and take into account the factors as exist there, but mindful of the closing of statements of interest of 15th of April and the fact that discussions we'll be having will take place in Sydney. That's probably not satisfactorily answering your question, but I think the answer is that at this point we're just looking at the official line is just looking at the GNSO Council positions, but recognising that there are going to be a number of factors we're going to have to take into account and intend to discuss that in Mexico or before if you want to. I think there's going to be some quite interesting transitional and other things there. I don't know whether Patrick or Maria might want to add anything at that at this point.
No, Tricia, thank you. I think you've covered everything. This is Maria.
And Patrick, are you happy?
Yeah, you might want to add that's just something that hasn't been discussed yet at the NOMCOM.
Yeah. Thank you. So, the chair is mindful, but it's one that I think we've got to, between, say, now and Mexico, be clear on, and perhaps having a discussion with you on that.
Thank you.
Okay, so.
Thank you. I think I'm absolutely right. I think you need to be very, very mindful indeed of the new structure of the GNSO. One criteria of that was very much looking for different types of non-com people for each of the houses, and then one as a more of a generalist. And I think from the experience we've had so far of non-coms, we've always found value with people with particular expertise more so than generalists. And I think at this time of what's likely to be the biggest ever expansion of top-level domain names, the sort of expertise that would be particularly useful on council and probably within the user's house would be somebody who's either a competition lawyer or familiar with competition issues, and particularly public policy competition issues.
Okay. Thank you. I think one thing, and I may not have said this explicitly, Philip, but it's something running through, I think, everything I've said, which is this time I really, A, want by the time of Mexico to have, or after the conclusion of Mexico, to be clear in my mind of the types and the specs of the candidates we have to have. But I think secondly then, I'm going to be wanting you all to be in a help in the recruitment drive, getting statements of interest for potential candidates that will fit the bill on that. And I would mention that one of the things that Maria and I and also Kieran have been discussing is really much more candidate focus and outreach work. So, for example, I'm going to organise a financial services outreach part in London earlier in the year. Secondly, Philip, if the council feel that it's important to have that expertise, well then, you know, let's look at doing some outreach, because unless we get statements of interest by the 15th of April, we can come up with a perfect spec, but without having the candidates who might fit the bill there.
Yep, very good point.
Okay, thank you. Another minute or two, is there anyone else that would like to ask a question or make a comment at this point? I think we're going to schedule a time together in wherever it's going to be, Mexico City. You know, we'll have more time to talk, but does anyone wish to add something at this point? No? Okay. Well, thank you, Tricia and Maria and Patrick for coming and for talking, and look forward to talking to you more about it.
Okay. Well, I think... as you know, I'm also chairing the ALAC Review Working Group, which hopefully will conclude its work and have its report for Mexico City. And I think it would be, again, in the context of some of the changes, that that also might be relevant. And also at any time, if you want either on a call or separately to discuss this, then very happy to do that. And thank you for making the item first on the agenda so that I can go.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Kate. Okay.
Bye.
Okay, moving on to the next item. The next item is to confirm the election results for two GNSO representatives to the community-wide working group on geographical regions. Glenn, can you give us the details?
Everybody voted, and the highest votes were given to Olga Savelli and Zaid Jamil. And you've been sent an email with your number and the way you voted, and I think it is just to confirm that those results are correct.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone that needs to question the results? So I can take it that those results are confirmed by this group. All those that confirm that, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposition to that confirmation? Okay, thank you. The results are confirmed. Olga and Zaid, thank you. Good luck, and we look forward to hearing a lot from you on what's going on in those. I don't suppose this has actually started yet, but look forward to it.
Thank you.
Okay, next item is the RAA. There's a set of proposed motions on the table, several different sets, I believe. Let me go to the point in the motions for RAA. There's alternative one, which was made by Tim Ruiz, and I'm going to sort of go through these at the first and then open up the floor for discussion. The first motion made by Tim Ruiz, seconded by Chuck. Whereas ICANN has undertaken a lengthy consultative process related to amending the registrar accreditation agreement. Parties have arrived at a set of amendments that are generally thought to be worthy of inclusion in the RAA. Resolved, the GNSO Council supports the attached RAA amendments and recommends to the board that they be adopted. A second motion on this path, made by Tim Ruiz, seconded by Chuck. The GNSO Council has recommended that the RAA amendments developed by the ICANN community be adopted. There is a belief that additional amendments to the RAA may be required. The registrar constituency is open to continuing dialogue about future changes to the RAA. Resolved, the GNSO Council calls on ICANN to establish a consultative process by which to review the superset of community-suggested RAA issues and amendments not addressed in the present set of amendments, and to work with registrars to develop a procedure for proposing additional amendments in the future. I also have a second alternative that was proposed by Alan Greenberg, but was neither made nor seconded by anyone in the council. And I can read through that if people believe I should. However, it would need to be the resolution would need to be made by somebody.
It's Alan. I'm happy to let it drop because of the other ones that have been made.
Does there anyone object to dropping the second alternative proposed by Alan? Okay, then I will mark that one as dropped. So we basically have the first alternative, which is the the two-stage proposal by Tim, seconded by Chuck. I'd like to open the floor on those motions, on the vote of those today, and on any other issues that people wish to bring up on the RAA amendments before the vote. I'm taking it to you now.
I'll raise the mic as well.
You're very, very faint.
Yes, sorry. Is that better?
A little better, but still faint. Okay, Mike, who else?
Christina, please.
Christina, anyone else?
Alan,
anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Mike.
I think it's really just a point of order. I don't want to get into the substance of this point. This discussion really started with the motions about a week ago, and our constituency was scrambling around to provide our comments to the CLD process. We just really haven't had a chance to discuss this motion by Chuck and Tim at this point, and we'd like to postpone a vote until our next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Christina?
I apologize because I missed roll, so I don't know which of the registrar constituency reps are available on the call.
Adrian is here, and I believe
Stefan is here.
Excellent, wonderful.
Stefan is here.
I emerged from my ETLD comment drafting yesterday and posted a list, two questions to Tim to the list regarding the motion, and I understand that because of his other obligations, he hasn't had an opportunity to respond, and I was wondering whether either of you could.
Adrian's bound to be able to.
Christina, I have not seen, I'm going through the list of if it was sent tomorrow, when was it sent, your time?
3:43 p.m. yesterday.
Right. I've got 100 emails here this morning as I've just logged on, and I'm going through. I haven't seen them, so I couldn't comment.
All right. I read them to you. Can you answer them?
Yeah, perhaps that's best. I'm trying to find them as well, but...
Okay, all right. Both of the questions have to do with the second motion. And in particular, the resolved clause. The first question was whether the wording superset of community-suggested RAA issues and amendments not addressed in the present set of amendments, whether that wording is intended to include those issues and amendments that were not addressed to the satisfaction of other sections of the ICANN community, even if the relevant theme or topic is in fact addressed in the amendments.
Would either of you like to answer?
Yeah, I'm just actually, now that you said that, I do remember reading those yesterday. Give me a second to absorb that.
Okay, well then the second part is that the resolution itself really deals only with the procedure for proposing additional amendments. And my question that I posed was, what happens then? Because assuming that there's a procedure for proposing amendments, and assuming again that that procedure is in fact utilized to propose amendments, what happens? Is the registrar constituency committing to beginning a new round of negotiations at that point, or what is the current constituency position on that? I think that's information that, for me at least, I need to have in order to be able to provide an informed vote.
Christina, this is Stefan. I think it's going to be uncomfortable for both Adrian and I to answer for Tim. He was the one who proposed this second motion, and he's worked a lot on this. I think it is clear, though, that the RC position is that we'd like to move forwards with this, and that was the idea for the very first motion that has been proposed. I'm not sure at this stage that we'll be able to give you specific answers to those questions.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
The ALAC has been trying to arrange a briefing with staff so it understood the processes that we've been talking about a little better. That never happened in the last few weeks. It is scheduled for the beginning of next week, and our preference is to defer a vote to the next month's
okay.
meeting so we can give a studied statement of what we feel about the actual process that we want to go along with now.
Okay, thanks. So from the three comments, and I'll reopen the queue in a second for other comments, had one basically, we have a constituency that would like to spend some more time on it, and as I've discussed on the list, we do have a general practice of if there's a constituency that does want to or does need to spend more time on an issue of deferring for at least. We have several questions that need to be answered. We have ALAC, so I'm wondering, first of all, if there's any objections to tabling the vote until the next meeting, and I'd like to ask anybody to speak to that if there are such objections, and any other comments anyone would like to make at the moment. Do I have a cue?
You can put Chuck in.
Okay, Chuck.
And Mike.
Anyone else? Okay, Chuck, go ahead.
Yeah, my comment's real brief, and I think everybody intends this. I would just hope that we can deal with these motions or any others that are proposed between now and then on the 8th and not delay this any further.
Okay, yes, thank you. Well, generally when we do this delay of one for further, we do tend to take the vote, although I would like to endorse the statement of please discuss things on the list and in private if need be, but preferably on the list, so that when we get to the point, we've got questions. So hearing no objection, is there an objection to tabling for a meeting? Okay, this is tabled until our next meeting, and I'll move on to the agenda if there's no further comments on this one now. Okay, then the next is the issues report on post-expiration domain name recovery. We have an overview staff presentation, and then there's basically a sort of pro forma motion to say that we will consider a PDP motion at the next meeting. So, Marika, were you going to do a presentation on this?
Yes, go ahead.
Issues report? Okay. So I'll give you the floor.
Okay, thank you. I think all of you should have received the slides that Glenn sent around, and I think the link is in the agenda. I'll make it brief because I know there are a lot of issues we have to cover, so I'll basically try to cover in a few slides the main points of the issues report. So turning to slide 2, basically as a background, the request was made by the At-Large Advisory Committee. In this request, they outline in a couple of pages the main concerns ALAC has with the current post-expiration practices, and it alleges that current measures have proven to be ineffective, that the loss of a domain name can cause significant financial hardship, and as well previous attempts to instill predictability for post-expiration domain name recovery are not successful. So this is deemed by the ALAC. So in the next slide, you basically have a snapshot of the life cycle of a domain name, and which I go in further detail in the next slide, basically focusing on the post-expiration part. But just to be clear as well, prior to expiration, there are a few stages as well that deal with post-expiration of domain names. So there are a few points that are incorporated in the RAA. First of all, the RAA states that a registrar shall provide notice to each new registrant of the deletion and auto-renewal policy at the time of registration. This information should also be clearly displayed on the website, in addition to any fee that is charged for the recovery during RGP. And in addition, the RAA requires also registrars to send at least two notices or reminders to registrants that their domain name is about to expire. Practice seems that more notices are sent than just two, but two seems to be the minimum. So following expiration, if a domain name has not been renewed, the registration will automatically be renewed by the registry the first day after expiration, what is called the auto-renew grace period. The maximum length of this auto-renew grace period is 45 days, but the registrar can opt to delete before that time. It can be on 0 days, but it seems that current practice is between 15 to 30 days or up to 45 days, so that's the choice of the registrar. During the auto-renew grace period, a domain name might resolve normally or stop resolving or resolve to a registrar-designed designated IP address, which then hosts a parking or under construction or temporary page. There is no formal requirement as to what should happen to a domain name once it expires and enters the auto-renew grace period. So the majority of registration agreements do seem to have a provision in place in which the registrant agrees to allow the registrar to redirect the domain name to another IP address, which then might host a parking or under construction or other temporary page following expiration. So basically, registrars may elect to offer an auto-renewal policy, but they are under no obligation to do so. So if a domain name is actually deleted, then it enters into the redemption grace period, more commonly known as the RGP, which I'll come to in a second. But there seems to be a trend or an increase in domain names that actually never reach the RGP because they're not deleted, but they actually get sold, auctioned, or transferred to another party during the auto-renew grace period. I mean, it should be noted that, you know, once domain names are sold or auctioned, most of the times the profits are shared with the original registrants, and these policies are normally outlined in the registration agreement. So it's something that the registrant normally should be aware of as it is part of the agreement they sign on to. So I said before that many registration agreements provide for this right of renewal by the registrar and the transfer of ownership to the registrar, either through a subsidiary or affiliate or through a third party in the case the registrant does not renew the domain name. And testament to the earlier statement that, you know, it seems that more and more domain names are actually not entering a RGP, is that a quote from a recent ICANN meeting, is that if the domain name has any value over $6, they're no longer entering the RGP. So, but then for domain names that actually do enter the RGP, the RGP was originally intended to prevent unintentional deletion. So the RGP was actually not established as a consensus policy, so as a result, it's a voluntary decision by registrars to offer it or not. I mean, it's believed that most registrars do offer RGP. The RGP is a 30-day registry hold period in which a domain name does no longer resolve or function. So basically, you get a black page. And basically, it's designed to allow registrars the ability to restore names that were deleted accidentally or without the intent of the registrant. So during the RGP, the registrant can redeem its registration through the registrar. The registrar can redeem the name by paying the registry renewal fees plus a service charge, which it then charges to the registrant. It is not possible to transfer a domain name to another registrar in RGP, which was one of the points that the ALEC raised, that they would like to see that possibility included. So following the RGP, at the end of the RGP, basically the domain name enters into the pending delete phase. At that stage, it can no longer be restored, it cannot be recovered by anyone, and it's deleted from the registry database after 5 days. And after that time, the domain name comes available for registration by anyone. So based on the basis of the overview of the different grace periods and surrounding elements, basically found that the auto-renewal grace period and RGP, even though they do what they were intended to do from the original development, they do not address concerns that are raised by ALEC that some registrants may not have sufficient notice or opportunity to recover expired domain names. The RGP is not a consensus policy, so there's no obligation for registrars to provide this to registrants. Many registrars do seem to offer auto-renewal policy, but again, they're under no obligation to do so. And the consequences of some provisions that deal with the right of the registrar to redirect or renew the name or auction or sell the domain might not be fully understood by registrants at the time of signing. Another point is as well that there's no obligation to put the domain name on hold during the auto-renew grace period or include a notice of expiration on the actual site, which might have as a result that the registrant does not realize the registration has expired until it's actually sold or auctioned off. So on the basis of that, staff would recommend the GNSO Council to initiate a PDP to review and consider changes addressing whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem expired domain names, whether expiration-related provisions in registration agreements are clear enough, whether adequate notice exists regarding expirations, whether additional measures need to be implemented to indicate a registration has expired, and whether, and if so, how to enable the transfer of a domain name in RGP. And as well outlined in the report itself, this is something that might be considered in the upcoming PDPs dealing with the transfer policy. So in addition, we believe as well that it would be helpful to get further information from ICANN compliance staff in order to better understand how the RA provisions I talked about before are actually enforced. Further discussions could be had on enhancements and better information providing, possibly outside of a PDP process, sharing information, and there were some suggestions made in previous discussion on possible cooperation between the GNSO and consumer protection organizations. And we do believe that further fact-finding and possibly a workshop might be helpful in actually preparing the ground for and really focusing the PDP process going forward if the GNSO Council would decide to move forward in that direction.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Before I open up, are there any questions, clarification questions that people would like to ask Marika before I go on to the various motions we have on the floor at the moment?
It's Alan. Could you put me on?
Sure, Alan. Anyone else?
It's Christina.
Christina, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Alan.
Marika, the request from ALEC explicitly said that when it was referring to the term registrar, it implied it meant registrars and resellers. Now, we understand that ICANN does not have contracts with the resellers, but can you go into a little bit into to what extent ICANN's contract with registrars requires that if they subcontract to resellers, that all of the terms that we've been talking about are indeed passed on and honored?
I might have to pass that question to, I think Dan is on the call, or someone from the service staff who might be more
because,
familiar with that.
Because from our point of view, whether it happens to be done through a reseller or not doesn't alter the situation, so I think it's important to review what the obligations of resellers are too, not only the registrars.
I'm not sure that was asked. This is Liz. I'm not sure that was asked in the...
It was the second paragraph said, note that when we say registrar, we mean both registrars and resellers.
Okay. There may be questions, too, that we'll want to follow up on online. So,
yeah, I don't know if someone from the service staff or Dan has a comment now, but otherwise I think, we should take note of some of these questions. And
Alan, this is Dan here. So I guess I understood the first part, and I think everyone here would agree with you that a registrar is obligated to fulfill all its obligations under the RAA, whether it makes a registration itself or through a reseller or an agent. So the registrar's obligations don't change, and then, but ICANN doesn't have any direct relationship with the reseller, and they don't owe us any obligations directly.
I understand that, but my assumption is, although to be honest, I haven't found that clause in the RAA, that the registrar has an obligation to pass it on, and the registrar is in default if they don't
has an obligation.
Follow up with their subcontractors or their resellers.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure I follow. Maybe we should take it up by email.
Sure.
Okay. But Alan, if I could just clarify,
okay.
that relates to the provisions that are in the RAA related to post-expiration domain name recovery. You're talking about those specific provisions?
I'm talking about the whole process associated with it, yes.
So, this is Dan again. I guess I'm just not following, because we think the registrar is obligated to fulfill all the obligations in the RAA, and it just doesn't matter whether the registration came to the registrar through a reseller or not. If a registrar sponsors a name, it has a registrant for that name, and it has certain obligations, and it has to fulfill them. It doesn't matter whether it was a direct sale or not.
Okay, let's follow up offline, because I think it's important, but I don't want to take council time right now.
Okay, Christina.
One thing that I have never been terribly clear on, and I think would be helpful to perhaps cover in this PDP if it goes forward, or whatever it is that we decide to do, unless, of course, ICANN staff happens to know the answer off the top of their heads. But who exactly is considered the registrant during the auto-renew and redemption grace periods? If the full duration of both periods are provided by the registrar.
Christina, this is Dan again. This sounds like we're getting more into the kinds of questions to be better. I think in Marika's presentation, she said that maybe we should put some questions to compliance and kind of come up with some Q&A, because it's better to answer things like that, I think, where we can sit around and come up with a careful answer, because it's sort of almost a
no, exactly. I mean, and that was my point, is that it was something that has never been clear to me, and unless it was something that was really clear to everyone else, but I think it's something that we should get some more information about.
It seems to me that there's, Chuck, that at least one of those questions can be readily answered, and that is, if a name is deleted and goes into redemption grace period, the original registrant is a registrant at that point in time, because they're the only ones that can renew it during the RGP.
Well, they have some rights there, but I'm not sure we'd call them the registrant, because the name has been deleted and the registration no longer exists. The registration agreement has expired, so it gets complicated.
The deletion command has been exercised, but it hasn't been deleted from the registry database yet.
I think there's one point of view, though, that the registrant is only the registrant as long as the registration
order, please.
Is valid.
Yes, sir.
Can all this conversation happen offline? They're very good technical questions, but it's a waste of time on a two-hour conference call like this.
Thank you. Is that okay to move that one offline? Okay. Are there any other clarification questions on Marika's presentation before we look at the motions that are on the table about this?
This is Mike Rodenbaugh. I have one.
Okay, Mike.
So it's not really clear from the report what staff is recommending. At first, they're recommending that we initiate a PDP, and then later they seem to be recommending that we do other things before a PDP. So I guess, first of all, I would say I'm not sure staff should be recommending anything to us in that regard, but really should just be laying out the various options. But I'd like to hear from staff, I guess, what their feelings on that and on what they really are recommending. They use that word several times in here.
Just to point out, I mean, as we understand, the only way either the council can decide to do a PDP or not. So that's why we phrase it in the context of a PDP to review the different questions. But we're not saying, you know, we're not trying to imply how these questions should be answered. We believe that is indeed the role of the council to decide, and of the PDP process to figure out how these questions should be answered. But these are the things that we feel that should be further addressed. On the other recommendations, we think that could be done in conjunction, because further information from compliance will be helpful, and as well the workshop or the further fact-finding is more in the preparation of, like, drafting a charter and getting the issues clear. But this is more within the constraints of
either the council decides on a PDP or not.
Okay, that's probably a good lead-in to talking, to sort of looking at the motions. And there are basically two alternatives that I've sort of put on as pro forma in terms of where we need to go with these and based on my reading. And Chuck had one, although I don't know if we've combined them, Chuck. Have I altered the one I had sufficiently for it to cover what you were saying?
Well,
I'll read through the one I have, and then we can get to that.
Just very quickly add, I think SOF has actually a duty to provide a recommendation. So just very briefly, that's part of our task to do it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's actually says that in the bylaws. Thank you. Okay, so the first one I made, and it hasn't been seconded yet, says, whereas on 20th November 2008, the ALAC requested an issues report on post-expiration domain name recovery, then as it refers to CNX, one of the issues reports cited below. Additional clarification is needed on several items discussed in the above referenced issues report. Resolved, the decision on whether to initiate a PDP will be delayed until 29 January 2009 to allow for the needed clarification to be obtained about issues report items defined below. ICANN staff is asked to provide clarification no later than 15 January 2009 on the following from the issues report. And then it goes on to list several bullet points in section 4.2 in reference to the last bullet on page 15 regarding how best to enable the transfer of a domain name in RGP. The continuation of the same paragraph on page 16 reads, on the latter point, the GNSO Council might want to consider whether this should be investigated in the context of the upcoming inter-register transfer policy, PDPC, IRTP, operational rules enhancements. It is recommended that this should be added to the requirements of the IRTP PDPC, or is it recommended? What action items might be needed to accomplish this recommendation? What changes would need to be made to IRTP PDPC? Next bullet in the last paragraph of section 4.2 on page 16, staff recommends the GNSO Council could consider enhancements which would highlight more clearly and visibly the provisions of the contract in relation to auto, renew, and expiration policies. It should be noted that ICANN staff does not recommend that this be included in a PDP. Sub-questions, how is this envisioned that this would happen if not via PDP? What action items might be needed to accomplish this recommendation? Next bullet, section 375 of ICANN's registrar agreement, accreditation agreement, as quoted on page 28, says, at the conclusion of the registration period, failure by or on behalf of the registered name holder to consent that the registration be renewed within the time specified in the second notice or reminder shall, in the absence of extenuating circumstances, result in cancellation of the registration by the end of the auto-renew grace period. Parent, although registrar may choose to cancel the name earlier, close parent. Sub-question, is this requirement being enforced? If not, why not? Question, under this policy, would registrars be required to cancel or delete a registration in the absence of extenuating circumstances as defined in this section if a registered name holder does not consent to renewal? If not, why not? Next item, section 375.3 on page 29 reads, in the absence of extenuating circumstances, parent, as defined in section 375.1 above, quote, parent, a domain name must be deleted within 45 days of either the registrar or the registrant terminating the registration agreement. Sub-question, is this requirement being enforced? If not, why not? Question, under this policy, would registrars be required to cancel or delete a registration in the absence of extenuating circumstances as defined in this section? If a registered name holder or registrar terminates the registration agreement, if not, why not? So that was basically the one motion. The second motion, which was an alternative contingent also, was whereas an issues report on post-expiration domain name recovery has been produced and introduced to GNSO Council, resolved the GNSO Council members will consult with their constituencies in preparation for a vote on a PDP or other possible motions at the Council meeting on 8 January. So basically those two options is one, asking, I mean it's fairly obvious, asking the staff to go away and work on answers on those following issues, bring back a report, at which point we would consider the PDP. Alternatively, if we've heard the report today, go back to the constituencies and be ready for a PDP vote and any other motions that people might put in place by a week before the meeting at our next meeting. Chuck, you had an alternative motion.
And
does
Aubrey,
what I read cover that?
Yes, except there's, I only see one variant. You have the 29 January date for a vote on a PDP in parentheses, whereas I suggested, you know, we actually target that date specifically for a vote on.
Oh, yeah, I already changed it.
Oh, you did? Okay. All right.
I did.
Okay.
I changed it and resaved it. I think I did.
Oh, okay. Well,
so
I,
it says
I
until 29 January 29, because that had been one of your requested changes to call it the same.
Yeah, and I you incorporated mine, so no need to even.
Right, that's
mine.
What I did. I tried to incorporate yours, but I'd never gotten a confirmation that yours could be therefore withdrawn.
And I will second yours.
Okay, thank you. So I've got the first one seconded. I'd like to open the discussion now on these two motions. The first one has been seconded. The second one has not. I'll text you.
Christina, please.
Christina? Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Christina.
I was just hoping that staff could advise whether they anticipate if we do, whether the 15 January deadline is sufficient time for them.
It's a bit of a challenge because of the holiday, but I think we could accommodate it.
All right, thank you.
Okay, any other discussion?
In that case, Aubrey, I'll second your second motion.
The second motion.
Oh, the second one is contingent. Never mind.
Is contingent on the first one failing. That's basically if we don't say go away and do this extra work,
okay,
et cetera.
I'm confusing myself. Sorry.
You're really trying to confuse things, huh, Christina?
No, I just confused things, and she fell into it. Okay. Is there any other discussion on this alternative one motion that I just read? Any other question? Is there any objection to a voice vote on this motion? Hearing no objection, all those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. Okay, hearing no nays, it's unanimously carried. Thank you. Okay, and that means that we do not get to the contingent. It's marked as not necessary. Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda is the GNSO issues report on registration abuse policies. We had a presentation on this at our last meeting, so people have had a chance, hopefully, to go to their constituencies and discuss this. I have basically put several motions on the table. None of them have been seconded yet. And let me explain what these motions, and then I'll read through them. Well, actually, let me read them through and then explain what I did so that we have a basis. And I'll start reading. Okay, so the first motion, which, as I say, is made by me but has not been seconded, whereas the issues report on GNSO issues... that one needs to be. Whereas the GNSO issues report on registration abuse policies indicated that further review, evaluation, and study be done before a PDP is initiated, resolved that a drafting team be formed to create a proposed charter for a working group to investigate the open issues documented in the issues report on registration abuse policy, specifically 9.1, review and evaluate findings. A first step would be for the GNSO Council to review and evaluate the findings, taking into account that this report provides an overview of registration abuse provisions, but does not analyze how these provisions are implemented in practice and whether they are deemed effective in addressing registration abuse. 9.2, identify specific policy issues. Following the review and evaluation of the findings, the GNSO Council would need to determine whether there are specific policy issues regarding registration abuse. As part of this determination, it would be helpful to define the specific types of abuse of concern, especially distinguishing between registration abuse and other types of abuse, if relevant. 9.3, need for further research. As part of the previous two steps, ICANN staff would recommend that the GNSO Council determines where further research may be needed. For example, is lack of uniformity a substantial problem? How effective are current registration of use provisions in addressing abuse in practice? Is an initial review or analysis of the UDRP required? The working group charter should be ready for review by the Council on or before 15 January 2009 and will be voted on at the Council meeting of 29 January 2009. The second motion that I'm putting on the table, also made by me but not seconded, is the required motion on a PDP, an issues report on GNSO issues report on registration abuse policies, I have to fix that, has been produced, and the bylaws 1063B require a vote on the formation of a policy development process. Resolved that a PDP on registration abuse policy be initiated. And that vote would be a vote that would have absentee ballot open. So that means that we wouldn't necessarily get to contingent motion A or B. Well, actually, we might. Contingent motion A was, and these are just there, the motion to initiate a PDP at this time failed, and a working group has been formed to further investigate the issue presented in the issues report. Resolved, the GNSO Council will reconsider initiating a PDP on registration abuse policy once the working group has produced its report and it has been subject to constituency and public review. And then contingent motion B is the one that assumes that a PDP has been approved. The motion to initiate a PDP passed, and a working group has been formed to further investigate the issue presented in the issues report. Resolves that the GNSO Council vote on the appointment of a task force as required by the bylaws 1064 at its next council meeting on 8 January 2009. So basically, the first is there's work that needs to be done, and whichever way we go on a PDP, we need to start forming a group that will define a charter for the working group, whether that working group ends up being the PDP working group or that working group ends up being prior to a PDP. The second one is we have to vote on a PDP as determined by the charter, so therefore that motion has to be put before us. If that motion succeeds, and since it's an absentee ballot, that we would know that, as I say, we may know that today, we may not, because of the threshold levels, then there's basically one motion if it succeeds and one motion if it doesn't. The idea being to make sure that if it doesn't succeed, we keep on the table a vote for a PDP at a later date, and if it does succeed, that design team doing the charter basically take into account that this will be a PDP working group. I hope that's not confusing. It's trying to deal with the sort of evolved motion that we're having in terms of PDP and working groups, and deal with the fact that there are issues that were possibly recommended as prior to the PDP, but of course it's up to the council to decide how to handle that. Having said all that, I open up the floor before going through the votes, if indeed I end up having seconds for these things. I will obviously need a second for the PDP vote. Please. Hey. Two. Anyone?
I'll just see if I can boil that all down.
Yeah,
I've got it correctly. It's Mike Rodenbaum. So you're saying in your first motion it's basically to create a drafting team that will create a charter for a working group outside of the PDP process. Your other motions are PDP, yes or no. If yes, then task force, yes or no. Is that basically right?
Essentially, the only nuance on that is that if we do have a PDP, then this charter that's being produced by this working group would be something that would be considered as part of, if we don't do a task force, how we're doing it. We obviously have this working group. So, yeah. So essentially what you said, but it just slightly changes the work of the working group, whether we have a PDP or we don't.
Okay, well, we could do the drafting team and then have a vote on the PDP in January.
Yes, we could also do that. We could put off the vote on the PDP until after the drafting team.
I think that might...
That's something we could just take the first vote on the motion, and then we could take a vote basically to defer action on the PDP until a date in January. We're still doing the thing of trying to be explicit about our dates. So if someone were to make a motion that, you know, we defer voting on a PDP until a certain date, until 29 January, that would be a fine motion, I think.
I think we could just add it into the last sentence of your first motion. And then
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
And then I would second that motion.
Okay, so that would be, where would you add it? Under the resolved, that a drafting team be created to form a proposed charter, and
the
then basically underneath the 3 points?
Yeah.
Oh, no, the working group should be ready for review. Council before 59. Okay.
We voted on the council meeting of January 29, at which time the council will also consider whether or not to institute the PDP.
The council will take the PDP vote.
Fine.
We'll take the bylaws required PDP vote. Period. And so with that, let me change this. Let me just save this so I will have saved it and people can see it before.
Well, then presumably the drafting team can hopefully come to consensus whether to initiate a working group outside the PDP or initiate a PDP.
Yeah. Can we save it so people can see it? Okay, is there any... I'll take a cue on further discussion of this motion.
Chuck?
Okay, Chuck?
A question and a comment. The question is it realistic to have the drafting team finish its work by 15 January? I honestly don't know.
And for a charter?
Yeah. I'm asking that. Yes, correct. Now, secondly, if in fact it is, then it seems to me we need to form a drafting team today to accomplish that.
If I can answer, I think it would be realistic to create a charter. And I think certainly, you know, we tend to start these things and get one or two people, but then people have to go back to, you know, talk among themselves in the constituencies, and people generally volunteer over the week afterwards, but...
And that's fine. I don't have any problem. I'm not saying, when I say it has to be, we need to initiate the process today. Otherwise, you know, before we know it, it's the first of the year and people getting back in the groove and we miss it.
Yes. No, okay. That certainly makes a lot of sense.
Avery Phillips here, just a word to Glenn. I understand Zahid's been disconnected from the call. He was dialed in. Perhaps you can have that. I've just got a message. He's back in. He's okay now. Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Avery, Stefan here.
Okay, yes, Stefan.
Just, are you putting that proposed motion up on the agenda right now?
Yes, in fact, I've saved it, and I just saved it again. On the motions page.
Thank you.
Yeah, I keep editing, going into edit, and then saving, so there's a slight lull, and hopefully I've gotten all the spellings right.
Yeah, it's up now, Avery.
Okay, thanks. So are there any other discussions on it before I call on a vote on this one? Now, is there any objection to taking a voice vote on this particular motion? Okay, in which case, all those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed to those motions, please say nay.
Nay.
There was one nay. Okay, thank you. Are there any abstentions?
Yes, one.
Okay, one abstention. And the abstention is that Stefan?
Yeah.
Okay, can you give a reason for your abstention? Normally we ask for a reason with the abstention.
It's going too fast for me.
Okay, thank you. I can understand that quite easily. Okay, thank you. So the motion has passed with by a majority with one abstention and one nay. Okay, thank you. And thank you, Mike, for making it so much simpler than what I had put down there.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Okay. The next thing on the agenda, we've done registration of use. Okay, we're at motion, and it's really motions regarding GTLD implementation plan communication period. And the first motion was put in by Chuck. Let me find those motions at the right of the head. So at the moment we have one motion by Chuck, which I don't believe has been seconded yet. We have an alternate motion by Christina, seconded by Philip. We have a motion 2 conditional on motion 1 alternate failing, I guess it is. Also put in by Christina and Philip. And then we have a motion 3, which was made by Chuck. I don't believe it's been seconded yet, although perhaps it has. I may have missed that. That is a slightly different subject on the new GTLD and IDN TLDs. Chuck, though, I wanted to give you a chance to speak at the advance of it, and also, if I could ask, I've been reading the motions, and my voice is getting gritty, so if we read your motion, I'd actually like to ask you to read it.
Well, let me ask a question first. Am I correct in assuming that if I withdraw my motion number 1, or at least, if I delay it until...
You want to table it, you mean, yeah.
Table it, that's fine. Table it until the January 8 meeting. Does that eliminate the need for your motions, Christina?
Yeah.
Okay. Then what I would like to suggest is that I'm willing then to withdraw that, or excuse me, table that motion until January 8th, and would like to suggest that we take a look at motion 3 that I propose, and I fully understand it hasn't been 7 days, but I believe that what's proposed there is in line with decisions we have made and statements we have made as a council in the past, and whether people are comfortable voting on that today or doing it on January 8th, I think I could live with either way, but I do believe it's consistent with what we've done in the past, and it's my understanding from
Chuck, can I interrupt for a second before we get to that one?
You did. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I did interrupt. Thank you. Okay, so I just want to make sure that we're clear on motion 1 has been tabled, motion 1 alternate has been withdrawn, and motion 2 conditional has also been withdrawn. Is there any objection to that statement? Okay, thank you. Now, sorry for the interruption, Chuck. Let you speak to your motion 3, perhaps read it and discuss your rationale. I just wanted to be clear where we were.
Sure. Let me preface it with a comment. It's my understanding from talking to some board members that they would very much appreciate the GNSO being very clear on its position with regard to timing compared to the IDN CCTLD fast track process. And that's kind of the basis of this motion. And it also it deals at least in part with the concern that was underlying that was the foundation for what I proposed in motion 1. So let me read it now. Whereas both the GNSO and CCNSO are anticipating implementation of processes to introduce IDN TLDs in 2009, resolve 1. The GNSO Council strongly believes that neither the new GTLD or CCTLD fast-track process should result in IDN TLDs in the root before the other unless both the GNSO and CCNSO so agree. And 2, fast-tracked IDNCCTLDs should not be entered into the route if they do not have an enforceable commitment to do the following, as GTLDs must do. The first one, follow minimal security and stability requirements, IDN guidelines and IDN standards, and sub-item 2, pay ICANN fees sufficient to ensure that IDN CCTLDs are fully self-funding and are not cross-subsidized by other ICANN activities. And for those that didn't see my email on this one today, I basically took language right out of the applicant guidebook in a supplemental document on cost considerations, where for the GTLD process, it's expected it to be self-funding and not be subsidized by other ICANN activities.
Okay, I'd like to open a queue, but I'd like to ask one question before I do. In reading this motion, it's a statement by the GNSO, but it's directed, is this like a policy statement directed to the board? Is it a recommendation? I don't quite see what we do with it. In other words, after this is passed, other than it goes in our record as passed, is it something that should be sent to the board? And if so, it may need to say that so I'm looking for that kind of clarification, and I'd like to open a queue.
Just in response to your question, I think it should go to staff and the board as our position, because I know that the board, even though the anticipated date is May for actually acting on implementations, they may act sooner on the IDN CCTLD fast track. So, yes, I think it needs to go to both, and I don't have any problem making that clearer in the motion.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to open the queue.
Yeah, Stefan, please.
Stefan, anyone else?
Christina.
Christina, I didn't hear who else.
Mike.
Mike, okay.
Tony.
Tony. Okay, I think I got Stefan, Christina, Mike, and Tony. Did I miss anyone?
Yeah, Avery, Adrian tried about to jump on.
Adrian, okay. Said I could miss you. Okay, so I got 5 for a first list. Go ahead, Stefan.
Thank you. Just a question. I'm not sure who I'm asking it to. Maybe it's Chuck, maybe it's staff. Are we assuming that there will be a contractual relationship between IDN, CCTLDs, and ICANN?
Can I respond to that, Aubrey?
Please.
I worded this very carefully, Stefan. Notice I said an enforceable commitment. And I was trying to be politically correct within the CCTLD environment and the GAC environment and so forth, based on things we heard in Cairo. Am I assuming that? I think I'm kind of saying that, but saying it in very cautious language that won't totally shut people's eyes off.
But are you saying that you think there should be, or...
Yes, but I'm not calling it a contract because
right.
They seem to violently react to that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, my understanding is that there wouldn't be because they violently react to it.
Well, we don't know that, and that's one of the reasons I believe the board needs to hear that from our side again. They often need ammunition that they can use in making decisions and so forth, and I think that's a primary purpose of this motion.
Okay, thanks, Chuck.
Okay, Christina.
I just am confused. When you're referring to before the other, can you clarify?
In other words, neither.
That's where I get lost.
Yeah, I probably didn't word it very well. That's probably why. Neither, and we said this something similar to this in the IDNC comments that we put forward, but neither IDN CCTLDs nor IDN GTLDs should go before the other, unless both SOs agree.
All right. I would think we might want to clarify just a little bit more.
I welcome clarification there.
Okay, Mike.
Chuck, could you clarify what you mean by minimal security and stability requirements?
Well, yeah, good question, Mike. You know, I struggle with that one a little bit. How do I, again, I'm trying to be really cautious so this is something that just doesn't create violent reaction from the other side. But maybe the word minimal isn't needed. I don't know. I was trying to say we have to, on the GTLD side, certainly comply with certain CTL security and stability requirements, as well as the IDN guidelines and whatever the current IDN standards are. And that's all I'm saying. So, Mike, feel free to improve that.
But do you basically mean uptime requirements?
Well, I don't know if uptime requirements have to do with security and stability. I don't think I'm prepared to answer that. The idea is that there be some comparable requirements that the IDN CCTLDs have to comply with, just like we have to comply on the G side.
Got it.
Chuck, Philip, if you're trying to hook it to something real, why can't we hook it directly to the security and stability requirements in the RFP on GTLD?
I think that might be just fine, Philip. That's a good idea.
Because then it's clear what we mean. It's saying no more, no less.
Yeah, right, yeah. And like I said, I struggled with this one a little bit, so I appreciate the help.
Okay. You know, Mr. Adrian, the only problem with that is their draft, and you're drawing someone's attention to something that's in draft format.
I'm sorry, I don't follow you, Adrian.
I was just responding to Philip, actually, just saying that...
Oh, I got you. The draft of the guidebook. Gotcha. We could still refer to it, though, I suppose, or any future, you know, final version of it.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Tony.
Thanks, Avery. This is also a question for Chuck, just a question of clarity. Certainly some of the discussions that we've had in our constituency would suggest that the demand that you've referred to in some of the emails recently, Chuck, isn't the same in all quarters. In other words, where you've referred to pent-up demand, it isn't the same. In all the areas between the CC and the G space. And you made a pretty good point today that for each of those, there's probably a specific part of the market that each is ideal for, and they each fit into that category. But I couldn't quite equate that when what we're trying to put in place is something that could actually hold back the fast track. In other words, if both the GNSO and CCSO have got to agree to moving forward at the same time, it builds in some delay. And yet, if the demands aren't the same in each area, why do that? How do you balance those things out?
Good question, Tony. The way my mind's working on this, I think probably that there that probably could be handled in the kind of alternative thing that can happen. In other words, they wouldn't both go in the route unless both the CCNSO and GNSO agree. So that would give both SOs the option to actually evaluate the special circumstances that you're talking about. I think we all know that the demand for IDN TLDs, whether they be Cs or Gs, vary tremendously by region of the world and by country and so forth, so I totally agree with you on that. But in the case where there's demand for IDN CCTLDs, a case can very readily be made that there is demand in those same regions for IDN GTLDs, and in some cases it actually makes it easier for businesses and so forth, because instead of having to register their name in every one of multiple CCTLDs, they could do it in a GTLD. Now, I'm not suggesting that all should do that, but I think there are some that would be penalized if they had to do it in every CCTLD, when in fact if the Gs went forth at the same time, it would be more of a simpler process.
And
businesses have made comments in that regard. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just the follow-up to that. Do you think it is possible to actually quantify that? Because that's where the difficulty is going to come.
To, To quantify what?
To quantify where that demand does exist.
Well, I could tell you, I could give you examples right now. I think it definitely exists in China. On both sides of the issue, and I think it exists in Korea. Two real good examples. I don't think it's nearly so much so in a country like Japan, where they're fairly comfortable with using an ASCII.TLD on top of a Japanese second level. So it does vary.
Okay.
But
thanks.
Does that help?
I think it's as good as I'm going to get. So thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Adrian. Yeah, Chuck. Can you give me a circumstance where you believe that the GNSO would hit the CCNSO to allow IDNs to go in first?
I'm sorry. You were a little bit low on that. I didn't catch it all, Adrian.
Can you hypothesize a scenario whereby? Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah. Where you would see that the GNSO would allow IDN CCTLDs to go into the route before GTLDs.
And not right off the top of my head.
Right. So I'm just wondering why we even have that language in there to say that the other one may allow the other one to go in. Why don't you just stop it short at that sentence?
Well, I wouldn't be totally opposed to that, but I think my response to Tony kind of covers that. We can't foresee everything, and there could be a situation where maybe there is little or no demand on the GTLD side that we're aware of, and yet there is on the local level. And as long as we, in the GNSO, were able to look at that, we could do that. Could I name one of those now? No. Might it be helpful to have that flexibility? Maybe. And that's kind of what I was saying to Tony.
Okay, thanks for the explanation.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to add one point on. I think one of the important things that's in here is the mention of actually them going into the root, because part of what's happened in the discussion is a lot of people have sort of said, well, as long as we start the processes together, that's okay, right? And not really realizing that the process for new IDN GTLDs and the process for fast-tracked CCTLDs could be a very different length, with the new GTLD being probably a lengthier process. So one of the things that going in there about it going into the root is, I think, an important point. It sounds to me like, though, it needs some wordsmithing before we'd be ready for it. And so I'm wondering if there's any objection to tabling it until the next meeting and having the people that are interested in working with Chuck to basically wordsmith it, because there were like four or five different places where somebody had changes that they thought would make it clearer. Is there any objection to tabling this until the next meeting and then taking a vote on it then?
I have no objection for that, as long as we deal with it on the 8th.
Right.
And
you'll need a second, and it sounds like you probably have several possible seconds.
Yeah,
once you do the wordsmithing.
Yeah, and I would certainly like several of you, Christina and Philip and so forth, you made some suggestions. If you would just email those, I'll hold the pen on it if you want. But if you would just email me your thoughts, suggestions, and anybody else in that regard, I will update the motion.
Happily.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the motion, and thank you for the discussion.
And is it okay to go ahead and get a second, or should we wait until the...
If someone wants to jump in with a second now, otherwise they can send it on the list, and I'll put it in. But if there's one now...
This is Adrian. I'm happy to second.
Okay, thank you. So Adrian has seconded it. Okay, great. Moving on, the next thing we have, we already did item 8, which was the nominating committee. So we have item 9, domain tasting comment review, summary and analysis of public comments for AGP Limit policy draft implementation time. My voice is getting worse and worse. So is that, who's doing that? Is that Craig?
Yes, should be Craig.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Craig, you're on.
Thanks. Well, as most
people have probably seen by now, there was posting made to ICANN's website yesterday afternoon an advisory for the AGP limits policy, which includes the policy itself as well as the implementation plan. The advisory calls for the policy to be implemented by registries as soon as possible and no later than 31 March 2009. The advisory also requests that registries provide notice within the next 21 days to their registrars about the new policy. Obviously, the 21 days notice isn't about the implementation of the policy, but it's a notice that it's coming and that registries are still required to provide 30 days notice to the registrars prior to the implementation of the policy itself. So that's where the AGP limits policy stands at this time. Just for some other general information, there was a posting that went up in November about the reduction in AGP deletes following the implementation of the budget provision, and it was reported that between June and July of 08 that AGP deletes had decreased by 84%. The numbers that are now available for the August time period show that AGP deletes decreased from July to August by about another 22%, which means that AGP deletes from June to August of 08 have decreased by just about 89%. So just some statistical information for the council. Did the council want to go through what the summary of the public comments were?
Craig, it's Mike. Can I just ask a process question?
Sure.
So the plan has now been posted on the website, and that triggers a time period, basically. So this has to be done now by March 31st, essentially.
Correct.
But it can be done sooner. How does the registry do this exactly? Do they have to put out a public announcement? You know, what exactly has to happen next?
Well, and I think that when New Start implemented a very similar policy last May, they provide notice to their registrars, or they provided notice to their registrars about the restrictions on AGP deletes. And so the same process would happen now. We've notified the registries. The registries will in turn need to notify their registrars. And the policy and the limits will be effective on 1 April 2009. Did that answer your question?
I think so, yes. Well, I guess I gathered that they could implement it sooner if they wanted to. But
they could implement it sooner if they wanted to, yes.
All right. Thanks.
May I make a...
Yes, please.
Sorry, this is Stefan. I just want to make a comment, which has maybe been made before, but as I'm new to the council, I'm sure you'll all indulge me. I see that the budget provision has been very effective in reducing domain tasting, and I was wondering why, considering this, how good it has been at reducing domain tasting, why we couldn't wait a little while longer to just really get a feel for how it's working before imposing AGP limits, the actual policy, because the AGP does actually have some use to registrars.
Well, Stefan, it's Mike. It could still have those same uses for the registrars. That was built into the policy. The 10% threshold, basically, of free deletes every month.
Yeah, it's going to be more difficult for registrars to handle bad payments because they'll have to request. I mean, I understand all that, and I don't want to go back to the whole AGP delete debate, but I'm just wondering if there shouldn't have been more time allowed to just
gauge how well the budget provision is working. It's just a comment.
Okay, thank you. Craig had asked whether we wanted him to go through the reviews, to do the quick review of the comments. And was there an answer to that? Did people want that, or were they fine with just reading them on their own, or would they like a walkthrough of the comments?
Avi, it's Christina. I don't want a walkthrough of the comments, but I do have a question for Craig.
Okay, great. I don't hear anyone asking for a walkthrough of the comments, so take a cue. I have Christina. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Christina.
What I'm not clear on 100%, although I think I know the answer, is I know that registry operators have to provide in their monthly reports to ICANN the detailed, the delineated information regarding exemption requests, subject to the 3-month confidentiality period. Is that information going to be made available in the version of the registry operator report that is eventually made public?
Can you ask that again, Christine? I'm not sure I understood it.
I know that one of the big uncertainties that existed in the trademark community was whether or not the information about registrars that had requested exemptions would actually be made publicly available. It's been clear that it was going to be required for the operators to actually provide that information to ICANN. But kind of the next step in terms of having ICANN include that information in the reports as they were made public subject to the 3-month hold. So in other words, 3 months after this goes into effect, am I going to be able to pull up, a registry operator report and see which registrars requested exemptions and which were granted?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? Okay, thank you, Craig. Okay, the next thing on the agenda is travel policy. So we have the drafting team has done some work, has done quite a lot of work, and I'll ask Olga to report on that. And also there is a motion that's been put, made by Philip and seconded by Stefan, and I'll ask one of them to read it. But first, Olga, if you would...
Thank you, Avri. We had, I think, 3 conference calls, and we agreed in a text that was sent by myself, I think, 2 weeks ago to the council. It basically is a request to divide the budget that remains after paying the chair and the non-comma appointees travel, divided into GNSO constituencies for them to use it as they need. But I would like to also to comment that we had a meeting with Doug Brent in Cairo. I think Saeed and Robin were with me in that meeting. What we asked Doug for some flexibility in the usage of this fund by constituencies. And he promised to give us an answer. He said that flexibility is not so simple because I can have some restrictions in relation with audits of this, the usage of this fund. And I think that in this sense he sent some comments to the council a week ago. I sent a message yesterday summarizing what he suggested, and those texts were sent to the council. I don't know if you want me to read the draft text by the group and the summary that I made from Doug's comments, which also generated some comments in the list through these days. And then Philip made a motion about this.
Yeah, I don't think there's any need for you to read that unless someone else in the council believes that it should be read out loud, but I think people have had a chance to read it from the discussion. I think quite a few people had a chance to read it and discuss it. Philip, would you like to, I know I normally read the motions, but my voice is not doing great, so would you be willing to read your motion?
Yeah, sure, happy to do that. I mean, first, just a couple of comments in terms of why I made it. I mean, the motion essentially follows the central recommendation of Olga's group, which was distribute the money to constituencies. And having seen the discussion on LIFT, having seen some of the oddities that came out of the proposal in terms of the way money may be allocated, and the difficulties that Brian and his team are getting into, we just thought that making something that's very simple and straightforward in terms of expressing council's desire at this point would be useful for staff and board to look at and to take back, and that's the reason we're making it. Two points there. I mean, one of which the concern that there's a limited amount of money available. There's no point in having, you know, a high percentage of that wasted on administration costs. That does nobody any good. And secondly, I think if you look at all the combined billing hours of rocketeers who've been discussing this, we probably get the price of a Learjet to pick us all up for an extra contingency. So we wanted to make something simple and clear in terms of what we could do and to keep it transparent, which was the point of item 3 in the agenda. So, the motion. And the motion reads as follows. Whereas, Council welcomes the fact that ICANN has allocated some funds for GMO travel. 1. Council regrets the current proposal imposes administrative difficulty and may thus reduce the total budget available. 2. Council calls upon ICANN staff to nominate by 15 January 2009 a fixed sum for fiscal year 2009 that will be granted to each of the constituencies currently recognised under the ICANN bylaws of 29 May 2008. Such sum should exclude any budget to cover the costs of NOMCOM delegates or GMSO chair travel. 3. Council requests constituencies to publish the names of all those who receive travel support, together with a list of the relevant meeting or meetings to which the support was given and which were attended by the support recipient.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to open up a queue for discussion.
Chuck?
Chuck, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, my question, Philip, really has to do with the referring to constituencies. It seems to me that come June or July, when we implement the new GNSO structure, that stakeholder groups might be much more appropriate to allocate those funds to equitably and then let the stakeholder groups work that out. Is it possible to amend this to accommodate that change when it happens?
I mean, Chuck, you're right. I mean, things may need changing later. At the moment, we don't have a hook as to what that might look like. I mean, it may be a good idea, it may be not. One of the concerns that was discussed in Cairo was not providing a false reason for a constituency to exist by the fact they may get budget allocated. Another issue may be also that the board may need to look at its budget allocations as part of its approval of new constituencies. All those factors are up in the air, so the purpose of this motion was simply to keep it simple, and for now, we're a sovereign body within our own context. We can change this as soon as the externalities dictate change will be sensible.
Well, we do know, though, that there will be 4 stakeholder groups. That's not an unknown right now. Now, is the thinking then that maybe it shouldn't be divided equally between the 4 stakeholder groups? Is that why there would be reticence to accommodate that now?
I think there's a greater rationale in terms of existing constituencies than an understanding of what the stakeholder groups may look like here.
Because the constituencies could change drastically, so a brand new constituency that may be very small would get the same amount of funds as a constituency that's well established and been in existence for many years.
That's why the motion is contingent on the constituency existing as of today's bylaws and don't say anything about the future, because
right,
that would need to be a discussion at that time.
Yeah, you did cover that, okay. but then that leaves out, okay, well, anyway, that's my point. I don't know that I need to make a big issue out of it. I personally think it would be better if we converted to stakeholder groups once those are in place, but I'm not going to, you know, belabor that.
Right, you're not proposing an amendment to that?
No.
Right, okay. Any other else on the queue?
Yes, this is Olga.
Okay, Olga. Anyone else? Go ahead, Olga.
One clarification to Chuck. Chuck, we had that very long discussion in the conference calls if we should consider stakeholder groups or constituencies, and really didn't came up with a real solution or answer. But it's something that we should consider for the future structure of the GNSO. And also, Philip, I would like to ask you a question, but it's only related with my limitation about the English language. When you say such sum should exclude any budget to cover the cost of NOMCOM delegates or GNSO chair travel, you're saying that first they should take this part of the money outside and then divide it into constituencies?
Yes. So whatever budget ICANN's got for all of GNSO travel, they need to take that sum away for the NOMCOM bit, and the GNSO chair, whatever's left, they divide by the existing constituencies, and that way we all know by 15th of Jan what money is available.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Any objection to taking a vote on that? Any objection to taking a voice vote on this? Okay, hearing no objection, all those in favor of this motion made by Philip Shepherd and seconded by Stefan Van Gelder, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Okay, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you. It'll get forwarded to the staff. I guess to Doug Brent will be the address, and I'll send that on. Okay, continuing with the agenda, we're now at the status update part, and we have 14 minutes for a 20-minute status update. So, Denise, board update.
The board agenda for the December 11th board meeting can be found on the website. I'll run through the list very quickly for you. It was largely a board meeting taken up by briefings and updates rather than actions and resolutions. The board received the lengthy briefings on the new GTLD implementation issues and comments and meetings that have occurred thus far on the guidebook. They received a brief update on the 2009-2012 strategic plan. The public comment forum closed on Monday on that. They also received updates on the IGF forum in Hyderabad, and Paul Toomey gave them a briefing on the U.S. election results and the transition discussions that are occurring. There was a brief update on the at-large community summit scheduled for Mexico City, another brief update on GNSO improvements and implementation. They also received a brief update on Figueroa and Post. They did not have time to address the bylaw change for term limits for the GNSO. They did pass a resolution for individual users in the GNSO. That should be posted shortly. It is not yet. They approved an oral resolution. Staff has sent a subsequent email confirming in writing what they approved, and as soon as the board members approve that, it will be posted. It essentially asks GNSO, at large community, and other interested parties to work together to bring the board a recommendation on the treatment of users in the GNSO that complements the at-large community by late January. And as soon as that language is finalized with the board, I'll email it to the council list. And that's it for my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions?
Chuck?
Chuck, anyone else? Chuck, go ahead.
Denise, unless I'm missing something, the GNSO already submitted a recommendation with regard to users in the community.
Yes, that's right. If you're referring to the working group?
Yes.
Report? Yes.
So they're asking for us to make another one or just reinforce that one? I'm.
It sounded like they were asking for us to work together to come up with something.
So we use the term GNSO to encourage any of the interested parties who wanted to be part of additional discussions and any additional recommendations to do so. Obviously, the more recent work is focused on the non-commercial stakeholder group, how to charter that stakeholder group, and how to and whether to involve users or some segment of the user community as well as registrants in that area of the GNSO.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, thank you, Denise.
Welcome.
Okay, the next one is the policy items. The WHO is studies. I don't know who should give that. I could quickly give it and then other people could put pipe in. We're working on that at this point as a it's basically in the council. We've been having these, we've had two calls so far that are open council calls to which some council members have sent substitutes. Basically, we're working through the model as provided by the registry constituency. At the moment, we're trying to collect the rankings of all of the, as proposed, the priorities and the feasibility rankings from all the constituencies and possibly others, possibly ALAC, possibly the GAC, if so interested, and get those all, the registry, registrars, and non-commercial have provided numericals. The IPC and BC have provided verbals and have been asked and agreed that they're going to basically provide numericals in the 0 through 5 scale so that everyone's will be in a comparative thing. There's a wiki page on it, and there's a Excel file that basically shows, you know, the values that people have contributed so far. So basically we're working through the prioritization, and that, as I say, it's open council discussion, but because it's extensive discussion, it's not being done in direct meetings, and council members have sent substitutes in some cases. Anyone want to add anything to that quick scope of what's going on? I encourage, you know, those constituencies who haven't participated in the meetings yet and haven't sent in their priority ratings, and if the ALAC, who has a liaison here, wants to participate in the meeting and send in priorities by our, I think we said by 8 January, we needed to have the table complete, or 7 January perhaps it was, invited to do so. Anything else anyone wants to add on that? If not, I'll quickly go on to working groups. I'm still interim chair of Fast Flux. I think that group is nearing submission of a report. I wasn't able to attend the last meeting, but from what I see from that meeting, they've basically gone through most of the changes. There's still some wording being done in one or two sections and in an annex, but I think that report is very close to being deliverable to the council, to the constituencies, and community for comment. Marika, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, since you chaired for me at the last meeting. I guess not. Mike, can you say anything on the IRTP Part A PDP?
Yes, it's almost exactly the same update as for the Fast Bluff group. We are getting very close to finalizing our report as well with Marika's great help. It won't be anywhere nearly as long or exhaustive as the Fast Bus report, but ideally both will be ready for the council in the early new year.
Okay, thank you. On GNSL improvements, both the PPSC and the OSC are in operation. We have the chair of the OSC here, so Chuck, I don't know if you want to say anything on the OSC. I don't have anything to report specific from the PPSC.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, the probably next week, there will be an invitation that will cover both OSC and PPSC to join one of five initial working teams being established, and it will include links to some draft charters for the four work teams. And so certainly people within constituencies, but actually anybody in the community, will be invited to participate in those working teams that will be tasked with developing implementation plans for board recommendations related to each of the five areas. So hopefully you'll see that coming out to the council, and it'll be distributed to the liaison list and some other places, to the GAC and ALAC secretaries, as well as the liaisons, et cetera, as broadly as possible, and to be posted on the ICANN website. So the idea would be to move as quickly as possible to get volunteers for those teams, hopefully different ones for each of the five teams, so that we don't have scheduling conflicts, et cetera.
Okay, thanks. One other thing I'd like to point out that I think is the case in both. Both have basically done some edits on their charters and I think are working on milestones, though I think the milestones are very dependent on what the work teams come up with, and I believe that both will be sending updates of their charters to the council for review as required in the original implementation on the improvements.
And Aubrey,
okay.
One variance in the case of the OSC, we decided not to actually come up with draft milestones, but rather we tasked the working teams to develop those and then come back to us with those. So.
Yeah, okay. And I think it's the same, and I think that's what I was trying to say, but I said it clumsy. Okay, I don't know if there are any questions on that before I move on. Okay, on the council restructure implementation plan, I don't know who speaks to that. It's not me. Is it someone from staff? Is
Rob
it Chuck?
On?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks, Aubrey. I guess the major reporting item on that is that the chair provided to the board an update on the council's progress several days before the board meeting on 11 of December. And at this point, we have the document that Aubrey appended to that report, and that is the current state of affairs in terms of your all discussions about how to approach the transition and implementation of the council restructuring effort. I would imagine that you would all want to discuss the next time you'll have a substantive discussion about that, whether you're going to need to have some out-of-council meeting scheduled discussions to talk about a number of those specific items. At this stage, we have language that talks about time frames, language that talks about potential decision points, language that lays out sort of the timetable for achieving a restructured council by June 2009, and it's really a matter now of how you all best want to effectuate that.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, as Rob said, and as I indicated on the list, basically I sent in the note as drafted by Philip with the report that Rob is mentioning that had been updated based on Philip, Chuck, and others' comments. So basically trying to make sure that they got a full picture. I don't know if any comments on that before I move on? Chuck
would like to.
Yeah, Chuck.
Yeah, it seems to me, and if I'm oversimplifying this, please let me know, but it's just a matter of pulling that draft plan out, cleaning it up, and putting it around to the council just to see if it's okay to submit to the board as a plan.
Perhaps we should put this discussion on our next agenda to see how we're proceeding.
Well, why wait till then? Why don't we just get a, if Rob can just pull out the plan itself, clean it up, accept any edits that have been made, send it around so that before that next meeting we can all look at that and see if and be ready to either approve it or make additional edits at that time. The board actually asked for this plan on the 11th of December. It doesn't seem to be that complicated a task to me.
Well, but on the 11th we actually gave them the plan and said it was, you know, a living document, a plan that would change as more discussion. So it was given to them.
Well, we gave them a notice that included a draft plan that we're working on. We didn't give them a plan.
Okay. Well, certainly I think Rob, you know, if Rob's got the bandwidth, you know, and he'll tell us that to basically clean it up and send it to the constituencies. And as I suggested, I'll put a discussion of it on the next meeting's agenda.
I will be delighted to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think for me it was a plan in progress, so we may be splitting hairs in terms of description, but I agree with the next step.
Okay, thanks. Any other comment before I move on? Okay. IDN CCTLD implementation plan, essentially the GNSO comment. The comment period was extended to 7 January. Edmund is, I believe, still holding the pen on that. I don't remember. Is he on this call? It's been very quiet.
I'm here.
Yes, you are. Has anybody volunteered to help you? How are you coming with that? We would certainly need to do one of our approvals over email since our next meeting isn't until the 8th.
Right. I guess it's still with me, and I apologize if I haven't circulated a draft yet. I did see the extension, and that's sort of what have
sign of release time.
Lower. Right. And that's why, but I do intend to circulate a draft hopefully before Christmas, though, so we can take a look at it. And I'll reactivate the group that was discussing the IDNC all along, and probably try to put together a call or two, and to finalize it as mentioned. So basically, it's not much of an update. The only update was the extension of the deadline for the comments, and going forward, I guess the same way we have discussed about it last time.
Okay, thank you. And basically, I think if we have something for the council by the beginning of January, just after the holiday, then we can do one of those 2 to 3 day calls for acceptance before sending it through.
Cool.
Any discussion or questions? I mean, it's probably going to be very similar to issues we've already spoken of several times and spoken of earlier today.
Right.
The last thing I have on the agenda is the variance between council recommendations and new GTLD implementation plan. We've talked about this before, but we've never come to a conclusion of where we're at on that. What do we want to do? Do we want to put together a council paper comment or whatever? Yes, the comment period is over. However, I don't think that really matters in terms of if we've got something to say, getting it said, and getting it said as soon as possible on this variance issues. So I don't know where we're at. I don't know that we have time to discuss it now, unless somebody's got some great suggestions, but it's something we definitely need to get into on the list if we are going to do something. If basically we're going to sort of say, well, there's been individual comments and that's good enough, that's okay. But if we're going to do something, we really need to figure out what it is and organize ourselves to do it. Any comments on that?
Put Chuck in the queue, please.
Chuck, anyone else? Okay, Chuck.
first of all, it would be helpful if all of us contributed to identifying any major deviances from the or variances from the recommendations we made on new TLDs and the implementation plan that's on the table right now and will be revised shortly. The one obvious area is with regard to geographic names. So the questions, and I'm not suggesting we answer these now, but our time's running out. Are we just going to accept those changes? Do we want to, should we ask general counsel whether a two-thirds vote of the board is needed in those cases, or would that not apply? It seems to me where there, especially in this one area where there are huge differences between the implementation plan and what we recommended with regard to geographic names, that we should focus that unless we're just resigned that that's the way it's going to be. So I would suggest that we, first of all, just everyone contribute to any variances that are significant, and I think the one area we already know is geographic names. Are we content with leaving it there, or do we want to work on it? And if we want to work on it, let's make that decision not later than our January meeting.
Okay, I'll create a wiki page just in response to that. I'll create a wiki page. I'll start out by putting geographic variants on it, and everyone in the council can basically add to that page if they so wish. And that's one way to just start getting those collected. And if you don't want to do it on the wiki page, send an email, and then I'll put them on the wiki page. And I suggest that we take the rest of this discussion to the mailing list and have people talk about what is it we want to do, if anything. Anyone else wish to comment at this point?
I guess just to make it clear. If
okay, Mike, yeah.
If we don't do anything by middle of January, you know, it's not going to matter because staff is going to be finalizing probably the second draft around the end of the month, right?
Yeah, and we'll get to comment on the second draft also. But, yes, you're right. Any other comments?
Edmund.
Edmund, yes, please.
Yeah, and another part I just want to bring up that's pretty much obvious deviation is the length of the TLD string, especially for IDNs, which the GNSO has recommended to not have a minimum limit, which is now the draft has introduced that particular limit. So
okay,
add
thank
that
you.
To the topics.
Okay, that's great. One of the things I'd recommend that we do when we enter these variances is to, just to make it easier to point to, is to it, when we put it on the wiki, is point to where in our recommendations we say one thing and where in their implementation they say another, so that it's quite clear and anyone can find it. So that's great. Anyone else wish to comment at this point? Okay, then under any other business, Glenn had a comment on council chair elections. If there's any discussion after that, as I'm a listed candidate, Chuck will have to chair those discussions. Glenn.
Thank you, Avery. The nominations have closed for the council chair. There was only one nomination, Avery Doria. There is a secret email ballot now voting, which is scheduled to begin on Monday, the 22nd of December, and end on Wednesday, the 7th of January. Are you happy with that?
Anybody have any comments or questions? So Glenn, it'll basically be just a confirmation vote on Avery as continuing in her role as chair, correct?
Yes, that's what it will be.
Okay. No questions or comments? All right, Avery, it's back to you.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone else have any other business for the meeting today?
It's Christina. I just have a question.
Certainly.
Of staff, if they're able to answer it. And I was wondering if at this point the folks working on new GTLD implementation had a sense as to when we may see the summary of public comment for the public comment period that closed on the 15th.
Any comment from the staff on the call?
I'm glad I don't have to do that.
This is Patrick, and I'll we're working on it, and I can't give you an exact date, but it's you know, traditionally there's a long summary that comes out after the end of public comment periods, and I think what we still need to find out about this is have an initial summary followed by something longer after the holidays.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have a comment? Ah, if not, that was quite a comment. If not, I want to wish you all a happy holiday of your choice and a great new year, and thank you for everything this year, and say I look forward to next year, and wish you all good vacations, safe travels if you're traveling, and all good stuff.
Same to you,
thank
all.
You,
thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.